Representative True.
I understand the concern with measurably increased. Major change goes far too far the other way. If there's somewhere that's a middle ground attempting to protect the integrity of that criteria, fine. But I think
my
that
motion
that,
is a middle ground.
No, I don't think I don't perceive your motion to be a middle ground. Well, I don't perceive that to be a middle ground because I think major change and major increase in cost is extreme.
It's significant. Less
you drive 17 Mack trucks side by side through that loophole.
Is there another word that comes somewhere down the middle between measurably and major? Since you can't measure a value, a dollar value, is there another?
Substantial.
Representative Hill?
How about if we just make the owner of the dwelling liable for any increased cost?
If I may, Madam Chairman, yes. In our task force meeting, the example was given by Dick Benner of a situation in Marion County where a farmer would have had to move a culvert at a cost of $500 to provide access to this non-farm home site, but that otherwise there was no impact. And I just suggested, why couldn't the guy who wanted the home site pay the farmer the $500 or offer to move the culvert for him and have some kind of a compensation provision? And we discussed that, and there was some concern that we were wading into an area that would probably be difficult to get out of. But the idea that Representative Hill has presented of minor costs or up to a certain point there being negotiation between the farmer and the non-farm homeowner to resolve any financial implications is something you may want to consider.
And also put the burden on the farmer rather than on the county to go to that homeowner and say, going to cost you $500 because I have to do this, or I have to move my peppermint field because the sprinklers are going to keep you awake over the other side of my farm.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to have a loss of $3,000 a year income, and you'll have to make good on something like that.
$300,000
Or very seldom you run into an unethical farmer, but you can have the farmer that would say, if you give me $200, I will object.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, Madam Chair, the way we phrased it was there would have to be a measurable increase, that the county would have to make a finding that it was an identifiable amount, and then the negotiation would go on around that amount rather than getting into this business of buying somebody's interest.
Representative Hill.
In EFU zones, I'd like to err on the side of the farmer. In urban zones, I'll err on the side of the homeowner. And in marginal zones, let's try to split the difference. But in EFU zones, that's a place where we grow farm food and fiber. And we got to do what err on the side of the farmer so that they can continue to do that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Drew.
I missed your last statement. I didn't understand what you meant.
What I was trying to suggest, Representative Troop, was the county is in the position of having to make the decision to approve or not approve the non-farm home site or the lot of record. So the county can identify whether or not the farmer presents valid evidence identifying what the cost is and limit the compensation to that and not get involved in the question of somebody paying off the farmer or the farmer objecting just for the purpose of getting some money.
I should point out that there may be times when you can tell that something is quantifiable where you can't tell what the exact amount is. You can tell it's going to be X amount over an unknown period of time, for instance, so you would not be able to make that decision. You would know that it was measurable, but you wouldn't know what the measurement was.
You could have a one-time front-end cost, Madam Chairman, or you could have a continuing cost because of a change in spray pattern, where the homeowner would have to pay the farmer $200 a year because he's having to pass over it five times instead of four times.
An unmeasurable cost that really gets into the situation is the activity associated with a dwelling. If that person has a big dog or even a little dog and they run out through your field a number of times, you can't really measure that cost, but you know there was a cost in shattered seed.
Madam Chair, 9 times out of 10, you sold that person that 3 acres expecting he was going to build a house.
Madam Chair,
shoot the dog.
Maybe 50%.
I'm
bill them for the show.
Yeah, we bring them in the mail, right?
Madam Chair?
It's got no business in the farm.
Representative Troop?
I think Representative Hill is accurate. We shouldn't be setting up a situation where we're going to be requiring that farmers get into compensation with their neighbors and the like. The idea behind the criteria that's included in this draft is to try to prevent those situations from occurring in the first place. And I thought that was our objective in trying to redefine the criteria for the EFU zone. If it was going to have an impact on that farming practice, then non-farm dwelling wouldn't be allowed.
I agree with you. Now, I don't have any problem if you can write it in such a way that you don't get into a hassle on going to court over the cost or the situation that Representative Parkinson had. If it's a one-shot thing that says, I've got to move my tight pipes if you come in here and it's going to cost me $1,000, you know, that you can compensate them and they don't object. If you can write it in such a way that you don't have to go to court every time you turn around saying that wasn't just compensation or whatever.
Madam Chair.
Representative Van Leeuwen.
I didn't completely understand our planner's statement there. Was he saying that he felt they could live with it the way it says, a major change in or measurably increase the cost?
If you had the compensation in it.
Was he talking about having the compensation in or out?
My first comment was to sort out your motion from the one of Representative Anderson's. And I suggested that Representative Anderson's, which says a major change in the cost of accepted farming practices, I felt got at the core of the issue. Now, whether it's a major change in the cost or whether it's a measurable increase in the cost, you still have the question of compensation.
Are you including in that if I have to set up my irrigation lines in a different pattern because of that person coming in, that is an increased cost or that isn't an increased cost?
If it's quantifiable under the measurable increase test, if it's judged under the major change, then the county's going to have to look at what the farmer can tell them that means in terms of cost and decide whether or not it's major or not.
And Chair, I'd like to ask Elizabeth whether significant change is any less than major change.
You're creating words for flexibility that the counties are going to interpret, and I don't know whether a county would consider significant different than major.
I'm reaching for a word that's less onerous than major, and that's the only one I can come up with in the spur of the moment. I need a word that's
too bad. Madam Chairperson?
Yes.
Can we go with the motions,
significant
and then maybe go back to major.
Okay. We have a motion before us to change it to major.
We're going with this motion.
I think that's our, like, my, no. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Trainer.
Question, I guess. Is that a substitute motion to Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Okay. Madam Chair, just identify for me what you say we are voting on now.
My amendment, which would be the dwelling or activities associated with the dwelling will not force a major change in or a major increase major increases in the cost.
A change in the farming.
You would have, because as I understood your motion,
change in the cost or the farming practice.
You did not want it to. You wanted it to reflect that there was a major change in accepted farming practice, or a major change, a major increase in the cost of the farming practice.
Okay, I said the dwellings or activities associated with the dwelling will not force a major change in the farming practices or in the cost of accepted.
Or a major increase in the cost.
Or a major increase in the cost of accepted farming practices.
But Madam Chair, I would like to change the major. I make a move that a friendly amendment to mine that would change that to significant instead of major. Significant in my mind being less than major.
All right.
Madam Chairperson?
Friendly.
See, I think that's inappropriate to make now because she was amending his amendment, which would be appropriate, but to go to another
She's
place.
Amending her own...
My own amendment.
Her own amendment.
Well, I thought she's going over to this other thing, which is the word major.
She's amending her own motion.
But Andy has agreed that at least significant was friendly. I don't know about the rest of my motion.
Can we vote on the motion, motion, please? That it would be not force a major change,
significant change,
the accepted farming practice, or a significant increase in the cost of accepted farming practice. That's what we're voting on now. Clerk, would you call the vote?
Chairperson, I'd like to table maybe all pending motions. That seems to work, and we'll start over. If that's the desire.
That's fine. Let's just vote on this and get it out of the way. Representative, clerk, would you call the roll?
Representative Friesen?
No.
Representative
Trahan?
Aye.
Representative
Crew? How about maybe?
Let me do that about that. Say yes.
No.
Representative Van Loen?
Aye.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative
Bradbury?
Representative Hill?
No.
Representative Parkinson?
No. Vote explanation. I am not sure.
Not yet.
No.
Troop changes to aye.
Troop changes to aye.
4-4 fails.
The vote fails for lack of 5 votes.
Now I get my vote explanation.
Yes, Representative
In a few minutes it could be I'd vote for the motion, but I just wasn't ready yet.
Okay.
I didn't have it sorted out in my head.
Representative Anderson's motion would be the dwelling or activities associated with a dwelling will not force a major change in the cost of accepted farming practices on nearby lands devoted to farm use.
Madam Chair, I would make that, if it's friendly to everybody, the word significant, that's less onerous than major.
Representative Anderson moves that the dwelling or activities associated with the dwelling will not force a significant change in the increase in the cost, a significant change in the cost of accepted farming practices on nearby lands devoted to farm use.
Question, Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
So I guess to the planner, he seems to answer most of our questions, I think. Russ?
You could just sit in that chair, Russ.
He's got a significant change in the cost. Can you think of something, whether it be a significant or a major change, that wouldn't also affect cost? What would this be? It looks like everything would affect the cost. Can you think of something, Russ?
Well, my comment, Representative Parkinson, was exactly that point, that if it was a significant change in accepted farming practices, it would reflect itself in cost.
Madam Chair? Same question to a representative from Agriculture for Oregon.
I have a question for Russ. We're waiting for someone from Hector to come up. Russ?
Yes.
If you say that a major change or a significant change in the cost of accepting farm practices, because you don't see any instances where you wouldn't have one without the other, then my question is, what's wrong with having both of them?
Major or significant?
Because, Madam Chairman, I think it's important to be dealing with changes that are quantifiable, the cost. And without putting the word measurable back in here, which is the one that got us into trouble, by having the word cost in, you're translating it into dollars, and then you're deciding whether the amount of dollars are significant or not. And that's where we want to be.
Hector.
My feeling is that probably significant is better than major. But I find it difficult to not go to the original wording, which gives us something that we know we can quantify out there. And I think we're giving something then that the courts can interpret without a lot of hassle, whereas I see the significant as another one of those weasel words that we always put in the law, which makes for a lot of litigation.
Yep.
So I like the original. I think we had something that was simple. If you can't quantify it, you don't get it. But if you can quantify it, you do get it.
I don't think there's a vote, Madam Chair. I don't think there's a vote on the committee to go with Major Bobo. I think we need to lose the bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
Hector, pin it down just a little bit more. In your opinion, is there any time a significant change would not translate into dollars? Can you think of other situations?
I think any significant change probably would translate into dollars, but then you get to arguing, well, how significant is it? Is it a little bit of thing? Is it the farmer's dogs coming over to hassle my sheep in which I've got to do something? Is that a significant one or isn't it? It may be measurable, but it may not be significant in the eyes of a court. And who's to say what the court's going to do?
Well, he kills them.
Don't you shoot the dog?
Well, this is all after the fact. Yeah, like these things, too many of the things we're talking about really don't, you can't interpret ahead of time.
I think my question is not directed as much to significant as to the cost if the two always are related. That was what I was trying to get at, and I think you answered it.
I'd have to be honest and say that usually any change that's major to your practices is probably going to increase your cost, if that was your question.
Or even a minor change would increase your cost. Yeah,
right.
Okay. Thanks, Hector.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Pooh. Lois, did you have something to add to this?
Lois Kanegi, Ag for Oregon. I was just going to comment on Hector's, following Hector's comments, that the one difference is for the operator who is, for the farm operator, who is a one-person operation, and the major change can be the time of that farmer. And it's a cost, but it's not a cost that I would guess the courts would recognize in terms of his hours. I mean, what kind of value do I put on my time or my husband's time when many times he's working for nothing as the year-end finances work out? But when I think of the time it's required to communicate with the neighbors and to work out problems with all the surrounding rural residential things, that requires, it's a major change when we're working in on a farm parcel surrounded by houses in comparison when we're working on a parcel that's not surrounded by parcels. That is a major change, but it does not measurably increase in terms of the dollar outlay. And from our own situation, from my own experience and working in both in suburban, I mean, or in areas outside urban growth boundaries of both Corvallis and Albany, I think having a significant change in the accepted farming practices or some kind of increase in the cost of accepted farming practices, I think both of those gives a better protection for agriculture, as Representative Hill was saying.
Madam
Chair. Yes, Representative Traynor.
Question of counsel.
That was one more.
Is your opinion that the courts would recognize extra labor time by a self-employed person?
I don't know. Maybe some of the people who've been in court more, but
as a cost.
I don't know. You might be able to quantify it if you were to be able to, but you'd be picking a number and assigning a dollar per hour amount to it, and how they would choose to do that would determine whether it ended up being significant.
Lois, can you come back for just a second? How would you feel about, I'd sure like to get this over and move on. How would you feel about the dwelling or activities associated with the dwelling will not force a significant change in or a significant increase in the cost of accepting farm tax assistance?
I think that would be helpful. It's my first preference would be the original language, but I think this is a good compromise.
Go for it, Madam Chair.
We have a motion on the floor, Representative Anderson. Your motion.
Just what you said.
Representative Anderson.
What
said,
did you say, Madam Chair?
That's the way I heard it.
Well, I was just trying to look for some compromise to get off this and to move on. That you would look at dwelling activities associated with the dwelling will not force a significant change in or a significant increase in the cost of accepted farm practices on nearby land. You would use significant.
We
take out our measurable increase.
No question.
Where's the next significant?
Why increase?
significantly.
Is there any objection?
I object.
Clerk, would you call the roll?
Tell me where the second significant huge
on line 12, a significant change in
my turn to
or a significant increase in the cost of accepted farming practices on nearby lands devoted to farming. Clerk, would you call the roll?
Aye.
No.
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 Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hill.
I have a question for council. What if it doesn't appear that there'll be any significant increase of the cost and the dwelling is located and there is a significant increase in cost as a result? Is there anything in the bill that addresses that?
There's nothing in the bill that would provide for that. This is simply approval criteria.
All right, anything else? Can we move down to any to lot of record on that page? Is that what you want to go to?
A question, Madam Chair, on line 17. What does unsuitable mean there? Page 9, line 17. Okay.
Buildable.
Which way do you mean unsuitable?
Not buildable.
Not buildable.
Okay.
No. Now they're saying,
I'm sorry.
And I can read it two ways.
Not farmable.
Unsuitable for farming.
It refers back to line 14.
Right. Yes. Where it defines unsuitable.
Land. These should be in there.
It refers back to line 14. The dwelling is situated upon generally unsuitable land, and then they're talking about what will be that.
Okay.
Okay, then, Madam Chair.
Representative.
What's reasonably in line 18? What limit does that put on it? In line with the other things.
Scott? Somebody?
I really need it from a planner's point of view.
Russ? And I think you wanted to talk about Marvin, anytime you want to just jump right up, you can do that.
Madam Chair, I had that highlighted too. I just don't understand that sentence.
Okay. We have trouble understanding this sentence.
Dick Banner for 1,000 Friends. You're talking about the sentence that starts on line 17
and
goes to
18
and 19. Okay. This again came from the EFU Task Force and the Joint Committee. It was in Senate Bill 234. It was added to reflect existing case law that came out of the Rutherford versus Yamhill County case from 1977. And what that case was about, very briefly, is someone was proposing to put a non-farm dwelling on a small piece, I think it was 5 acres, of Class 2 soil. And the county said it qualified, it met the standard for non-farm dwelling because the parcel was too small. And the court said, just because the parcel is too small, if it's good soil otherwise, it doesn't mean it's unsuitable. As a matter of fact, in that situation, the 5-acre parcel had been used for farming and had been farmed in conjunction with a large tract next door. So the 5 acres was being farmed in conjunction with about 50 acres next door. So the court said, just because it's small doesn't mean it's unsuitable. Now, it can be unsuitable if it's small, and what this sentence is attempting to do is to identify that situation when a lot or parcel of, say, class 1 or 2 or 3 soil can be unsuitable, but not solely because of its size. It could be, let's say it's a 5-acre piece and it's isolated from other farms in the area by railroad tracks, or a draw, it's at the bottom of a cliff or something like that, and it's good soil, but it's a small parcel, and it can't reasonably be put to farm use because it's across the railroad tracks or it's at the bottom of the draw.
Madam Chair?
Dick, would ownership have anything to do with it at all?
Yes.
Owns the surrounding land?
Yes. If that five-acre piece was owned by one person and the person didn't own 50 acres next door, and that person had made an effort, let's say, to lease that five-acre parcel for farm purposes, or had attempted to sell it to an adjacent farmer, and because of its small size or unusual setting, nobody was interested in leasing it, and nobody was interested in purchasing it, then that person, I think, would make the test.
Well, Madam Chair, a ridiculous example, I'm sure, but what if the farmer next door said, I'll give you $50 an acre for it, or if he said, yes, I'd like to farm it, I'll give you 5% of the crop?
That's why reasonably is in there. It gives the county the opportunity to come back at that farmer and say, we think you're just trying to stop the location of a farm of a house here. We don't think that's reasonable. It's not reasonable for this person to rent it to you for less than it costs in property tax, for example.
Well, we've got committee members trying to stay awake. We're just trying to settle this one issue,
Chair.
And we will adjourn. Yes, Representative
Lewin, Representative Parker. One quick question. Does the practical planner, the one who has to live with it, agree with that?
Are you saying he's a practical planner?
Well, I don't know whether he's practical.
He has to be like in
I move he's a practical planner.
Madam Chair, Representative Van Leeuwen, this does come out of the Rutherford case, and planners have learned to live with the case law. The thing that you have to recognize with the new non-farm parcel provisions is that you're eliminating class 1 to 3 soils. So you're dealing with parcels that are in class 4 to 8, and probably the leasability or farmability of that is going to be decreased to a certain extent, so the issue is not as great as if we had the non-farm provision the way we as planners would like it and be able to use it on class 1, 2, and 3 soils also.
In other words, that language is fine in there.
This language only applies into, excuse me, Madam Chair, only applies to those lesser classes of soil that are referred to earlier here.
That's right.
Or 3.
Ho, ho, ho.
Now, before I leave, and I know Representative Troop wants to move on, I just want to make it clear for the record.
I'm going to help you
move on now.
There are many counties that have homestead provisions, and I just want to remind the representatives that they've all been acknowledged by LCDC. Those were local compromises in developing EFU zones. Most of those homesteads are on Class 1 to 3 soils. And when you change the EFU zone to eliminate the potential for non-farm home sites on Class 1 to 3, you're going to force a number of counties to eliminate the homestead provisions in their EFU zones. And the perception out there after Measure 6 was that we were going to loosen the system a little bit rather than tighten it. And there may be some people out there that will be upset if you eliminate the homestead provision. And I just want you to be aware of that.
How do we eliminate the homestead provision?
Because in EFU zones, counties say that if the old farmhouse is there and you meet certain criteria, you can break the old farmhouse off and the farmer that's farming it now can build a new one. And that in effect becomes a non-farm parcel and would have to meet these criteria. Well, most of those are not on class 4 to 8 soils, so those provisions are no longer going to be implementable. And you're going to create, there's a perception out there.
Tell me again how that works. You've got an old farmhouse.
The rules are different and the standards are different, and Marion County doesn't do it because we don't agree with it. But LCDC has acknowledged EFU zones, right, Ron? They have homestead provisions.
You're taking a farm dwelling and making it a non-farm dwelling, so that's the test you apply.
And there are people out there now.
Let's have a more explanation.
Yeah, I need some more explanation.
Madam Chair.
Representative Trainhorn.
I'd really like to address that issue when I can think. I think it's a major issue that needs to be talked about, and I'm not sure I understand what he was saying.
I don't understand what he was saying.
I do.
Representative Anderson and Representative Hill.
Oh, and the full committee, I would like to make a quick up or down vote, and I again would move on page 3, section 6.
Page 3, section 6.
Delete section 6. and top the page, and insert all goals applied to marginal lands except goals 3 and 4.
Representative Anderson moves that we delete section 6 again and say all goals apply to marginal lands except for 3 and 4. Any discussion? He wants to do it when all the committee members are here. Clerk, would you call the roll?
No, no.
You can only vote once.
I thought I was going to get your vote.
Representative Cannon?
Yes.
I thought you were going to say yes, yes.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Bradbury?
Aye.
Representative Hill?
No.
Representative Parkinson?
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Representative Hill?
Before we leave page 9, that underlined section 9, 17, 18, 19, it's totally incomprehensible. The sentence does not make sense.
We are going to...
It's not in English, so maybe we can...